Next item on the agenda is number 10, Mr. Rob Boswell. Item 042357. Mr. Madden.
Mr. Commissioner. Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner, gentlemen. It's rare that I have an opportunity to speak on my shortcomings before I even start a project, but it was pointed out by counsel that any references to a uncovered boat lift are erroneous, mea culpa. In your evaluation, I indicated the presence of a boat lift at the site and also a future boat lift. That doesn't happen, so strike any comment, and I'll point that out. But having made that embarrassing statement, I will go on to what I need to talk about here. Mr. and Mrs. Rob Boswell request authorization to construct a 70-foot-long by 6-foot-wide extension to an existing 91-foot-long private non-commercial pier with a deck totaling 220 square feet and 6 mooring piles adjacent to the applicant's property situated along Kings Cote Creek in Northumberland County. The project is protested by Ms. Helen Friedenstein, the Oyster Ground leaseholder. Here's an map orienting you to the site. This is the Potomac River and Judas Sound, the very familiar Lewisetta, Travis Point, Lewisetta Marina, and the enclave of Lewisetta. Here's Kings Cote Creek, and up on a Cherry Point Neck is the property. Mr. and Mrs. Boswell own a weekend home in a residential subdivision. I believe it's referred to as Kings Cote Harbor. At the end of Cherry Point Neck, I pointed it out here in the circle. It's approximately 6 miles northeast of the town of Callio in Northumberland County. The couple has an existing 6-foot-wide private non-commercial timber pier with an overall length of 112 feet. The pier extends 82 feet from the mean low water mark and includes 100 square foot L head and 2 mooring piles. The piles are to accommodate the 32 foot graded white, 300 marlin. According to the applicant, the mean low water depth at the pier end is minus 2 feet 8 inches. Here's a nav chart showing some of the depths of the water. It is a bit shallow in through this area here. The Boswell's Pier is approximately in this location here. Here's an aerial photograph of the site. The Boswell's Pier is here, circled. That's their property. This is Ms. Helen Friedenstein's property. In addition to being the Oyster Ground leaseholder, she's also a neighbor. The Boswells would like to construct a 70-foot-long extension, a second L head measuring 140 square feet, and that odious term, they do not want to put in an uncovered boat lift, and install 6 additional mooring piles. Upon construction, the proposed pier would extend 152 feet from mean low water. The mean low water depth at the end of the pier is reported to be 4 feet 2. Here's the close-in aerial shot showing the existing pier and a short L head and the boat at the mooring. Another angle showing the property, the pier relative to the property line, approximately 31 and a half feet over that away, offset from the property line. Here's the plan view drawing of the existing pier and the proposed addition. The current pier appears, that's the one that's down here. The current pier appears to have been constructed by a previous property owner, Mr. Abbott. The original pier request in 1996 was for a 100-foot-long pier by 6-foot-wide private non-commercial pier with a 140-foot L head and 2 mooring piles. The pier was not protested, and in 1996 the request was authorized by statute. The Mr. Abbott received a zoning permit from the Northumberland County Office of Building and Zoning on June 5, 1996. As can be best determined by the county and commission staff, the pier originally built by Mr. Abbott appears to be the same length from mean high water as the pier currently owned by Mr. and Mrs. Boswell. The L head, however, is oriented. They flipped it. It's a different orientation. They rotated it, and no boat lift on it. And it appears to be 31.5 feet from the property line. Here's what they want to build. It's highlighted in red. They'd like to achieve a depth of 4 feet, 2 inches. Standard cross-section drawing showing the width of the pier. And I wanted to use this particular drawing to outline where Ms. Freidenstein's lease is. It's all up along the shore. Also goes into, I believe this to be the Boswell's Pier right here. Although it's in Chartreuse, that is the Boswell's Pier. So as you can see, it's wholly within Ms. Freidenstein's oyster lease. And as I mentioned a moment ago, ground shot. The current project is protested by Ms. Freidenstein, who is concerned that the pier is greater than 100 feet. She was concerned about the impact that that would have on her oyster lease. Because the pier was greater than 100 feet, Section 28.2-1205 subsection D requires that the leaseholder be consulted. On January 3rd, 2005, this incidentally is item 3C, we received a protest from Ms. Freidenstein, which significantly altered the circumstances under which a permit could be granted. Ms. Freidenstein indicated that the area in the vicinity of the pier was productive oyster bottom, and further that she felt the scope of the project was excessive. The oyster ground leaseholder indicated that she would agree to a 100-foot-long pier. In a subsequent letter, which appears as item 3B1 in your packet, staff requested that the protestant support her protest by supplying documentation verifying the area around the prospective pier extension was productive bottom. Section 20, in an attempt to clarify the productivity issue, Section 28.2-630 defines productive oyster bottom as those areas which can be demonstrated to have suitable substrate for oyster or clam production and evidence of commercial oyster or clam production within the past 3 years. In a follow-up letter, which is item 3A in your packet, Ms. Freidenstein provided the information. In her letter dated February 1, 2005, Ms. Freidenstein claims that Mr. Lake Cowart Jr. planted 2,672 bushels of oysters in 2000 and 2002 and harvested 115.5 bushels of oyster from the ground in 2002. On March 4th, commission staff agreed at the applicant's request to postpone the public hearing on the matter in order to allow Mr. and Mrs. Boswell to seek counsel. And that is item 4C in your packet. On June 15, 2006, staff received a letter from Mr. A. Davis Bug on behalf of his applicants indicating that he would be available to provide oral arguments for his client on January 25, 2006. This started the 90-day clock specified in Section 28.7-1205, within which the commission is required to act. We have recently received a letter, the commissioner did, from Delegate Robert J. Whitman, who believes that the proposed pier extension will have a significant impact upon the leased oyster grounds held by Ms. Freidenstein. With your permission, Mr. Commissioner Bowman, I would like to read the Delegate Whitman letter into the record, which is what you proffered.
Please do, sir.
If that pleases you, sir. All righty. Gentlemen, that is 4A3. Dear Commissioner Bowman, I'm writing in reference to an application for a pier extension into an oyster lease held by Ms. Helen Freidenstein. An application has been filed by Rob and Kim Boswell to extend an existing pier from 91 to 161 feet with a 6-foot-wide extension of a timber pier with a 220-square-foot L-head and 6 mooring piles. The structure will have a significant impact upon the leased oyster grounds held by Mrs. Helen Freidenstein under lease number 10039, District 2, plat number 11762, Lot 18. These oyster grounds have been planted by the leaseholder and are of particular value in the efforts to establish sustainable native oyster populations in Virginia. While I'm sympathetic to Mr. and Mrs. Boswell's application, there must be consideration given to the preservation of productive oyster grounds. With all of the pressures oyster populations face, reducing habitat that demonstrates success in producing market oysters should absolutely be avoided. In addition to the positive economic impact of maintaining productive oyster bottom, there is also a significant positive environmental impact. As the Chesapeake Bay faces additional challenges in maintaining water quality and biological diversity, any action that reduces productive habitat must be avoided if we are to have any chance of saving this ecosystem. Thank you for your time and consideration in this matter. If you have any questions, please feel free to contact me. With warmest wishes and regards, I remain. Pardon me. We have received no other state agency has commented, no other individual has objected to the project. And in the way of a summary and recommendation, section 28.2.1205 of the code already states that while a permit is required, it shall be issued to the applicant. The commission, however, is permitted to reasonably prescribe the size, dimension, and location of the pier extension for the purpose of minimizing adverse impacts on such oyster grounds. While there is no other location along the Boswell's shoreline that would necessarily be better, staff believes that there is insufficient evidence on the record to indicate that Mr. and Mrs. Boswell even need a 70-foot extension or an additional 140-square-foot L-head and associated mooring piles, let alone access to mean low water depths of minus 4 feet 2 inches. Although the applicant has expressed a need for a 50-inch depth, the Boswell's Grady White has a draft of 19 inches and is already moored at the existing pier. Should the commission feel such extension is warranted, staff could support the construction of a 19-foot-long by 6-foot-wide extension. This 19-foot-long extension will get the pier to a 101-foot mean low water length and reach a mean low water depth of between 2 feet 11 inches and 3 feet 3 inches. Because the length exceeds 100 feet, it would require a permit, and its issuance would seem to satisfy the code requirements. In addition, the encroachment over the Freidenstein oyster lease could be further reduced by stipulating that no additional lift or protrusions of any kind be allowed on the extension, and further that only 2 mooring piles could be driven outboard of the new pier extension. Staff also believes that if approved, Section 28.2-12630 of the Code of Virginia should be invoked, which would grant the oyster ground leaseholder 1 year to remove any shellfish resources from beneath the footprint of the approved pier extension. With that, I'll rest, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Jeff. Any questions? Mr. Shook.
Yes. Wouldn't a boat lift at the end of this extension, if they so want that extra, be better for the environment than mooring the boat and painting the bottom of it?
That's that boat lift term again. Yeah, exactly. That's, yeah. I mean, a boat lift, if you put a boat lift on that, sure, mm-hmm. and it would get the boat out of the water.
Right, but we're saying here...
It would be even better, yes, of course.
But what you're saying here is that there would be not be able to put a boat lift.
In an attempt to reduce anything that's out there. Yes, the boat will be in a slip.
Right.
In an attempt to reduce to the greatest extent possible encroachments over state-owned submerged lands, we would recommend, staff would recommend, not putting a boat lift out there. But, again, once the piers are driven and the boat's in the slip, the cradle would reduce the amount of time that the boat would be in the water, and yeah, it could possibly...
And allow more sunlight underneath the boat, is it?
That's possible, yes, sir.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mr. Robbins?
One other question. You mentioned that there was no other site on the property that was better. Is that to say that the only way to minimize the encroachment of this pier or any expansion into productive oyster grounds is to curtail its length rather than reorienting it somehow? In other words, there's no opportunity to reorient it in such a way that takes the oyster issue off the table.
I would defer that question to Lake Howard Jr., because he's going to be here in just a moment to talk about the oyster productivity. He does work that bottom. On other occasions, we have dictated or worked out encroachments that we reduce encroachments. Matter of fact, the Johnsons right next door, they pulled their pier back to 100 feet because of the issues that were raised by Ms. Freidenstein. They elected voluntarily to pull their pier back. That's this pier here. That one. They originally wanted to go out there, but they reduced the length of it so that they would not be over that ground. My understanding from Mr. Cowart that this area is quite, the whole area is pretty hard bottom. But he can speak specifically on that.
Thank you. Any other questions of staff? Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Applicant here, present or represented? Good afternoon, sir.
Which one? Okay.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine.
You remember the bar?
Yes.
You don't need to be sworn, sir. Is the applicant going to testify?
I don't think so.
Okay. If he's not, you're fine.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. State your name, please.
For Dave Bug.
Good to have you, Mr. Bug.
I'm a lawyer from Irvington, and I represent the Boswells.
Good to have you here.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Commissioner, associate members, counsel. If you will indulge me for a minute, I would like to introduce my son, Trip Bug. He's a lawyer. He's been with our firm for about a year. I brought him down here so he could watch this outfit operate because he's going to be doing some of this in the future.
Good to have you here, Trip. Welcome.
In talking about this issue with Mr. Madden before we began, he told me when I first called him that this would be a, quote, test case. And I checked with him and said, any of these cases come through? And my understanding is this is the first case that's come before the commission that the commission is called upon to put this new statute into play, new in the sense that it went into effect in 2000. Aren't any circuit court cases because they'd have had to come through here, and there certainly aren't any Supreme Court cases on how this statute operates. And so we're dealing with a test case. Test cases excite lawyers. They really
I love it when it happens, too.
They really don't excite clients at all. But in any event, the statute, and I think it's important to review exactly what it says, and this is 28.21205D, which is the section which was enacted in 2000. And Lake Cowart will, I'm sure, fill you in on a lot of the history that went into the log rolling and pushing that went into this statute. I wasn't there. He was. And I, he walked in this morning. I thought, this isn't fair, talking about running in a ringer on the other side. Anyway, the statute says, a permit is required and shall, legislative language, shall be issued by the commission for placement of any private pier measuring 100 or more feet in length from the mean low water mark, which is used for non-commercial purposes by an owner of the riparian land in the waters opposite the land, and that traverses commercially productive leased oyster or clam land, clam grounds as defined in section 28.2-630, provided that the pier does not extend beyond the navigation line established by the Commission or the United States Army Corps of Engineers. The permit may reasonably prescribe the design and location of the pier for the sole purpose of minimizing the adverse impact on such oyster or clam grounds or the harvesting or propagation of oysters or clams therefrom. The permit shall contain no other conditions or requirements. That's a couple more sentences I don't think have any bearing here today. Now, the Boswells are like so many people. They've got a piece of land that's on shallow water. I don't know this, and I don't know where mean low water is, but he tells me that this is maybe mid-tide, that low tide, the water line be about at this first piling in the middle of the picture. And as you can see, it's a big boat, and you've got a contour of the bottom. It doesn't go down very quickly, and he is at 2 feet 8 at mean low water there. That's a 32-foot Grady White, and the guys, I'm sure you guys know boats and how heavy that is. It's a twin-engine boat, and he tells me that at times the real low tide, he has to push it out. Obviously, he has to motor around with his engines up, and he really doesn't have enough water there for that boat, and that's why he wants more pier to get out to better water. The extension he's asked for would take him out to 311 at mean low water. Now, in staff's report, under summary and recommendation, it says the commission, however, is permitted to reasonably prescribe the size, dimension, and location of the pier extension for the purpose of minimizing adverse impacts. Well, that isn't what it says. You won't find the word size. You won't find the word dimension. What you find is design and location. And as Mr. Madden said in staff's report, there really isn't another location. And I will read, while there is no other location along the Boswell shoreline that would necessarily be better, there isn't another location. And so the first legal issue that's before this commission today is if you can't change the design. Well, you could change the design. You could cut off the L head. That's a change in design. But if you can't change the design to accommodate or minimize, not eliminate the adverse impacts, minimize, and you can't change the location, then I believe the statute says that you shall. You must issue this permit. That is legal issue number one. I also have some factual issues to talk about. But there are two basic legal issues we're dealing with. Under the old rule, the guy who wanted to build the dock gave a one-year notice. The person had a year to get their oysters and so forth out of there, and after that he could do what he wanted as long as he wasn't beyond the line of navigation. And this new statute was, I'm sure we can hear it all, as a result of a lot of give and take, a compromise, if you will. And the compromise made the rules, the legislature's made the rules, and they're the rules that we all have to operate under in order to apply this statute. And I think you need to look at the language that says that the proposed structure must traverse commercially productive leased oyster or clam grounds as defined in 28.2.630. 28.2.630 says, commercially productive oyster or clam grounds are those areas which can be demonstrated to have, one, suitable substrate for oyster or clam production, and, got to have them both, two, evidence of commercial oyster or clam production within the past 3 years. Well, I think number one is going to be easy. You're going to hear plenty about that from Lake Coward. But number two is an issue here. In January 2005, January 25, 2005, Jeff Madden wrote to Ms. Freidenstein and said in that letter that he had spoken with Lake Cowart Jr., who assured him that the area around the extension was productive. In order to support Mr. Cowart's claim, and this is in your package, we would respectfully request that you forward documentation in accordance with Section 28.2.630 of the Code, verifying that the area is productive bottom. What the Commission got back from Mrs. Freidenstein is a record of planting shale in 2000 and 2002, and she said, it's not really a record, it's just her letter saying, here's what we did. She hadn't produced any records. But she says 115 and a half bushels of oysters were harvested in 2002. When this application was filed, that was within 3 years. It's not within 3 years today. Now, it's my understanding that this area is presently under a closure. I understand from Lake Cowart again that the Department of Health is monitoring it, and he believes it may be opened shortly. And then when it's open, he's going to tell you that he believes there are oysters there that can be harvested. But the fact of the matter is that the statute requires that the opponent demonstrate evidence of commercial oyster or clam production within the past 3 years. There simply isn't any. Commercial production has got to mean that they have been harvested for sale. I don't think there's any other reasonable interpretation of what those two words mean, commercial oyster production, three words. And there simply isn't any evidence before this commission that there has been any commercially productive oyster or clam production from these grounds within 3 years before this matter is placed before the commission for decision. The question is not, is it going to be? Will it probably be? Has it been in the past? No, the question is, has it been in the last 3 years? It hasn't. Delegate Whitman talks about protecting successfully productive land. I think that the words he used is close. But it hasn't been successfully productive in the last 3 years. Gentlemen, I submit to you that is a silver bullet. The legislature made the rules. The evidence before you doesn't support a finding, and the applicants are entitled to their permit. Now, some factual issues. A staff report says that the applicants haven't demonstrated their need for these water depths. Well, I think that picture shows the need. But you don't get a bigger boat until you've got a place where you can tie it. It's the old horse and cart problem. But the suggestion that the applicant has to demonstrate a need for the depths is a condition that isn't in the statute. And the statute specifically says there shall be no other conditions placed on this permit. With regard to the bottom itself, Mr. Boswell tells me that he's been out there and checked, and he says that the shell that's been seeded or planted begins actually right at the 70-foot line, and that's 70 feet beyond the existing pier, which is the length of the proposed extension. That's basically where the shell starts. If I understood Mr. Cowart today, earlier, he said, yeah, there's some shell in that area where the 70 feet out into where the existing dock is, but most of the shell that's been put in the water has been put out beyond that. Now, as you can see from those pictures, there's one dock that sticks out just about as far as the Boswell dock, not this picture, but the aerial. Did you put that one? And I think that one is the lower end of the picture is right at the same length that the Boswells want. Mr. Cowart told me today that that's really not good bottom up there because that's the upstream side. But what you have is a situation where the shell really begins right at the end of what these folks want to put in. I started by saying lawyers like test cases, clients don't. The Boswells would rather walk out of here with a resolution than a dispute. and they are prepared to talk about some reduction in the length of the dock in order to get it done today. And some of you may have noticed Lake Cowart and I shuffling in and out of the room. We were trying to work something out. We never could quite do it, but we have tried. So,
how far off are you?
that's not a fair question. But in any event, we got down to 40 feet plus the L head, 40 new feet plus the L head and the mooring pilings. I have a diagram if the commission would like to see it.
We'll continue on in proper form, but I just want to make sure that there was some significant negotiation that may bring about a resolution.
There were.
I learned that from my former boss.
I
would have sent them out of the room and said, come back in 30 minutes, Ron.
That's right. Any questions?
Yes.
Mr. Fox.
Mr. Bug, the way I'm reading 28.21205D is that in order for D to apply, the oyster ground needs to be productive, commercially productive. And in accordance with your argument, it's not commercially productive.
Correct. They met one of two tests.
So then it would appear that section doesn't apply?
That's correct.
So then we go to some other section somewhere.
Well, he would be, I presume, if you give the notice, he'd be entitled to do it after 12 months to put the dock in.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, hang on a second. I believe the permit should be issued if it doesn't cross commercially productive oyster lands.
Pardon?
I believe if there isn't a showing it's commercially productive, then the permit should be issued.
Okay, but we fall away from the section, the paragraph that says shall.
Yes.
That would not apply. We would be on some other section.
I think you fall back under the old rule.
The old rule.
I think the old rule is still excellent.
Wait a minute.
I think where you cross oyster grounds and you're not over 100 feet, you fall back on the old rule. You give a year's notice and then you can build it.
That's if you're not over 100 feet.
Correct. And I think if you're over 100 feet but not over commercially productive oyster grounds, the same rule applies.
Okay. I don't know.
See Mr. Josephson hitting the book.
Well, what I'm looking at is if there's no commercially, if you determine that there's no commercially productive oyster or clam grounds, does 630 even apply, or is this a notice, a no permit necessary issue under the riparian right under Chapter 12?
I think it would be a no permit necessary, but I think that the oyster, I've changed what I just said. You're laughing at me.
With you.
Right. but you would still fall back under the old statute where you give a year's notice and the owner of the oyster ground has a year to remove their oysters.
Mr. Graham.
If the commission, as Carl was correct, I think we would issue a no permit necessary. But as far as the year, if you look midway down on 28.2630, it basically says if the commission finds that there's not productive oyster ground, the year trading period does not apply. So.
However, we still have to make that determination, and I think Mr. Cowards will probably provide some evidence to the contrary. Any other questions for counsel? Thank you, Mr.
Thank Bob. You.
Anyone else in support of this project wish to be heard? Anyone in opposition that wishes to be heard? Mr. Cowart? If she's going to testify, but that would be great. Both of you raise your right hand to be sworn. Do you solemnly swear the testimony that you're giving to be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you very much. Who's first? Good to have you here, Mr. Cowart. Yes, sir.
Good to see you in that seat. I think you found it a while ago what it's all about. Tie votes, sir.
Like a Toyota, you ask for what you got.
Tie votes, I think, were Bill Pruitt's specialty. Because he'd always say, I feel strongly both ways. So,
and I might add, I did in that case as well.
But look what they've done to him. They hung him on the wall.
I hung him. Go ahead, sir.
Well, anyway, it's good to be here this afternoon, and certainly I have a lot of respect for Dave Bug. He's one of the best lawyers in all the neck, and Chad Ballard made that comment several years ago when Dave was down representing a guy named Stanley Obear with Pride of Virginia Seafood, and he took a pretty bad-looking case and turned it into a pretty good-looking result. So I have a lot of respect for him, and certainly for what Mr. Boswell is trying to accomplish. But on the contrary, I'd like to talk a little bit about what law changes were made in 1999, in the year 2000, and then also because we have worked this piece of bottom for some years for Ms. Friedenstein, I'd like to talk about, you know, what I consider to be productive oyster bottom and how this does qualify under the statutes as they were changed in 1999 and 2000. In 1999, the Virginia General Assembly adopted House Bill 2272, patroned by Taylor Murphy, as a means for allowing the MRC to balance landowners' rights to wharf out with this when this right negatively impacts productive oyster leases. This bill passed the House 52-45 and the Senate 38-1, but it was vetoed by Governor Gilmore. In the year 2000, one of the bill's opponents, Bob McDonnell, who is now our Attorney General, became the patron of the House Bill 667, and that's what we have before us today in 28.2630 and 28.2205. That's directly the result of that legislation that Bob McDonnell patroned. The need for this legislation was necessitated by the growth in the size of docks, L-heads, T-heads, mooring pylons that had taken place in recent years in our shallow water estuaries across Virginia. A generation ago, we didn't see these large docks. We didn't see L-heads. We didn't see mooring pylons. And in most cases, the landowners would in some way work with the oyster shore leaseholders. And perhaps it was because they had a year to wait before they could build a dock. And the guy says, yeah, you know, go and build your dock. Just don't impact my bids with so much. This statute gives the MRC the ability to balance the riparian right to wharf out and the oyster and clam leaseholders' desire to retain productive bottomlands. During the 1999 legislative session, Taylor Murphy said, "The fact is, of course, that these landowners are not building their piers on their own property. They are building them on state-owned bottomland, which in many cases are already leased to private parties who may have spent substantial sums to improve and grow oysters on these leased grounds." I'm familiar with the lease that Mr. Boswell would like to add an additional 70 feet onto his dock on. We've planted oyster shells. We've planted seed oysters on this lease in recent years. I might also add that in February 2005, this area was condemned for the direct marketing of shellfish. Last week, I talked with Keith Skiles, who is the gentleman at the Department of Shellfish Sanitation, who actually looks in and reviews on a monthly basis these areas across the state. The state has a program where they go and test water in all of our rivers on a regular basis, and in the Cone River, which King Scott Creek is a tributary of, there are about 40 testing stations. They come in, they take water samples, they go back to the lab, they run the samples, and then they plot these on a chart in Richmond. And this area, because of the heavy rainfall that we had in the year 2003 and 2004, has been condemned since that time. Keith says if we get a good sample in July, then the likelihood of this area reopening is very good. In my lifetime, this area has been open, probably with the exception of this last two-year period. So I think there's a good indication that we don't really have a condemned area that Mr. Boswell is proposing to build his dock in, but we have an area that will be productive and can be harvested. For that reason, we didn't harvest last summer, even though there's some mature oysters on this bottom. We intend to harvest this summer as soon as it's open. I think Ms. Friedenstein's lease is about 18 to 19 acres, and there may be as much as 4 to 5 acres, perhaps, in this, perhaps not that much, of bottom that could be productive. Because of the docks on this bottom, and actually Mr. Boswell's and the one to the west of his that was referred to earlier, the one that's nearer to Ms. Friedenstein's house, which is the house on the point, the best bottom, in my estimation, is in those areas. The docks have already impacted the productive bottom in the past, that bottom that has good substrate, that had shells on it. Mr. Bug testified that that there's not a lot of shells in the area from the dock to the 70-foot area that they'd like to build the dock. There are some shells. It's not heavily shelled. But when we shelled it last year and we shelled in previous years, we didn't shell right into the docks. You can't work into the docks, so we didn't shell into the docks. So for that reason, I think that you're probably going to find less shells. I did find a few oysters there. They're in the condemned area. They're not here today. They went back on the bottom. And but there, it is what I think the statute says as a productive area. I would estimate there are probably about 40 feet of excellent growing bottom underneath Mr. Broswell's dock currently, and they're probably the growing bottom extends maybe as much as 270 feet beyond the end of the current dock. And then after that, the substrate turns to mud. In Virginia, smaller rivers and creeks such as Kingscott Creek, productive oyster grounds may border the shoreline. The value of waterfront lots, such as the lot Mr. Boswell has, is enhanced by accessing deeper water. The landowner benefits financially, while the oyster shore leaseholder loses the use of his oyster productive bottom. As you make your decision on this application, please ask yourself if this is a reasonable use of this bottom land. And Mr. Bug has read from 20.2.1205 Section D that says the permit may reasonably prescribe the design and location of the pier for the sole purpose of minimizing the adverse impact on such oyster and clam grounds or the harvesting and propagation of oysters or clams thereon. I believe Ms. Friedenstein at this time supports the staff recommendation. She would not want to see, is not in favor of compromises at this point. And I guess in reviewing some of the changes that took place or some of the things that took place in 1999 and 2000 that actually led to these statutes, Chad Ballard and Tommy Kellum and myself and the Virginia Seafood Council and Jeff Smith worked on this legislation with Taylor Murphy in 1999. And one of the stipulations at that time was 75 feet from low water. Northumberland County, which is where this project is and where we live, some of the board of supervisors, yourself in particular, objected to the 75 feet. So we compromised from 75 feet to 100 feet. And the other thing that was offered, I guess, as an incentive to make this more pliable was the fact that if, in fact, there was oyster bed that didn't have productive oyster bottom on it, i.e. mud bottom or something, hard sand that oysters or clams wouldn't grow on because of the low salinity, then those areas automatically would not hold the dock holder up for a year. One of the things that has taken place within leaseholds for years have been, even if you didn't have a productive piece of oyster bottom and you held a lease and a guy wanted to build a dock, you say, well, you know, I think we'll just hold you up for a year. And but if you want to, you know, put $500 in my hand, then maybe we'll make it, you know, less than a year. We can make it. Go ahead with your permit. I mean, that has been done. It's not right, but it's been done. And I think that this particular change in the regulation was put in there to address that situation. When Governor Gilmore in 1999 vetoed the original legislation, in Taylor's estimation, he really didn't fully cover the issue. He was actually looking at the oyster bottom and saying these are upland property rights that this person has. And really, he shouldn't, they shouldn't stop him from doing that. So whether that's right or wrong, we went back to the table next year. Chad was very instrumental in working with Bob McDonald and went back to the table and he said, well, you know, we want to make sure the guys get a dock. So some of the same language as far as the test goes, and that is productive bottom and, you know, production within the last 3 years, was kept in the statute in 630. And then there was another line put in there that says that, we took out the denial language, or the legislature took out the denial language and put in language that said you can either issue the permit or modify the permit. So, you know, you have the option of issuing the permit or modifying the permit. Now, from what I can understand from the staff's recommendations, modification could be as much as 1 foot infringement in this productive area over the 100 feet. And I think that's what staff has recommended. I'm not sure, but I think that's what they recommended. So, you know, that I think qualifies as modification. I would debate perhaps Mr. Bug on the term production and what it means. You know, what does production mean? Does it mean planting oyster shells? Does it mean growing seed? Does it mean harvesting? It takes 3 years in Virginia to, from the time an oyster strikes on a shell, it takes 3 years for it to grow to maturity. So I would argue that perhaps planting oyster shells or growing seed oysters, not necessarily just harvesting the product, would be what is necessary in order to establish production at the bottom. But one thing's for sure, in this particular area, this is one of these areas that we talk about in the millions of baseless acres that we have in the state of Virginia. We have 240,000 acres that are Baylor surveyed. Private individuals can't lease them. You know, the only thing you can do is buy a license from the state of Virginia, and if you have a waterman's card, you can go work on these areas, or if you're a private resident and want to catch a bushel for yourself, you go work on them. This other 110,000 acres that's out here that belongs to the that's actually the leases are held on from a private leaseholder standpoint, not a great percentage of them are productive. They don't have the right substrate. They're either mud, or in the case of the lower salinity areas where we can't grow clams, clams grow on sandy bottom. But in these areas, they're either sand or mud, and if you find these areas that have the clay substrate, that have the hard substrate, and will support shells and oyster life, then in our estimation, they're very valuable. And that's what this legislation was designed to protect, was those areas. And I think that, you know, as you look at the legal issues, Mr. Buggett said, permit or modify. Staff has recommended a modification, and that is a one-inch encroachment in this, a one-foot encroachment in this area. And when you look at production, yes, we have produced on this bottom, and we do have productive bottom, and we don't have shells as close to these docks as we could want to have them close to the docks. But then when you put a dock out, it's hard to work around a dock. So do you spend your money to plant the shells up to the dock, or do you stay off a distance? When the dock goes out, you're going to have to move off some more in order to prevent planting shells in this area. So I think that, I think those are the arguments that Ms. Bridenstine can use to say that really we think 100 feet is long enough. We don't think that the dock needs to be any longer than that. Any questions?
Mr. Schick.
Reports show that there was shells laid down in 2002. And then you had mentioned that you had done some seed work there.
We planted, I don't remember the year of the seed work. We did seed work. We did shell work back in the, I guess, early after 1999 or 2000. And then last year we planted seed again, shells again. And I think Ms. Friedstein brought the bill on that.
So you did do shell in 2005.
And we actually billed her on the 12th of July last year for 506 bushels of shells. So we did shells in... In 2005, the shells, I went down and looked at this piece of bottom again yesterday, and the shells in 2005 really haven't struck, which, you know, we don't get a strike very regularly on the Cone River. We do get a strike from time to time, and we do get some strike, but usually in wetter years, we don't get much strike.
Mr. Carrick, for the record, I'm going to need that bill since you referred to it in your testimony, or at least a copy of it before you depart.
Okay.
That would be fine.
So did you say that you did some seed work there?
We had in the past. I don't remember the year.
The year, okay. So I guess the question is when you're talking about what, you know, what this regulation really refers to is, you know, some people would say on one side that it's, you know, are you picking up oysters and selling them in the last 3 years, but you've got to grow them before you can sell them. Are you growing them in the last 3 years? Are you preparing... Well, ground to grow in the past 3 years, and I guess in your opinion, if you're putting down shell in the last 3 years, then that should come under the qualifications of it being productive.
In my opinion, that's exactly right. If you plant shells, you have done what you need to do in order to produce oysters. There are a lot of other things you can do, but you've done what you need to do to produce oysters. And we planted shells. This piece of bottom is something that's been used for years to produce oysters because it has the suitable substrate to produce oysters on.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cowart, you indicated that when you were out there recently at the property, you encountered some mature oysters. Do you attribute those to your past seeding and shelling operations in that area?
It probably came from shells in the earlier, you know, earlier 2000s, 2000, whenever they were planted before. Maybe some of the old substrate had been there for years, or it could have been some of the seed that just made it. Unfortunately, in the oyster industry, Dermo, MSX, and Kano's Rays have done a lot to decrease the oyster shoreholders' interest in planting product. And Ms. Friedenstein has been one of the people that has continued to try to make this oyster bottom productive, which I admire the fact that she continues to spend money on it. And, in the long run, hopefully it will be profitable to do that.
Thank you. Carol, I have one question for you. It's been brought up about the quality of the bottom, comparing where the applicant is versus where that pier is in the lower portion of the picture. Can you characterize the difference between where the Boswell's pier is located, and I don't know what direction that would be, but the
pier is actually east, I guess, in this direction, but the pier toward the lower part of the picture is longer. I think it probably was put in before this regulation was passed, but at the same time, the prime bottom is west of that. So that, really doesn't impact the bottom like these other docks or Mr. Boswell's or the one, I guess it's Reynolds Dock, next to that would if it were extended.
Can you tell me, or do you have any idea what the distance is between the Boswell's Dock and that lower dock? Or well, Jeff, if you're the one?
Jeff might tell you, I don't know. If Boswell is 91 feet long, it might be close to 300 feet. Maybe 400 feet. I don't know.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Mr. Cowart? Thank you, Mr. Cowart. Did Ms. Friedenstein want to testify? Come forward, ma'am. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you all for having us. I'm Helen Friedenstein. I want to talk first about the drawing about the old long pier. That was built way, way before the 100-foot law came into effect. So that's why that one is so long, okay? I want to talk about the boat also, Mr. Boswell's boat. My daughter and son-in-law have a boat exactly like it. In fact, my son-in-law has walked down and talked to Mr. Boswell. It's a guy thing, boats, they like kicking tires. So anyway, he comes to my pier, which is the furthest one up with no boat. My pier is 60 feet long, and he has no trouble getting the exact boat into my pier. I have a pier permit for 100 feet, but I had enough ample water, I thought, so I stopped at 60 for basically financial reasons. But my daughter and son-in-law do not have any problem getting into that one. I have used Mr. Lake Coward since I had the lease in 1984. He is the only one that's ever seeded, harvested for me, and of course I sell them directly to Mr. Coward. Other than that, I don't know what else I can tell you. He knows the brown. I don't. I trust him. And I just told you and gave you the bill that he did do it in July of 2005.
Any questions from Ms. Friedenstein?
Friedenstein, yes. I do have one other comment.
Yes, ma'am.
With the other neighbors around, if Mr. Boswell gets the extension, everybody else is going to jump on the bandwagon, and they're going to want to get the extension also to go out further. And that's really going to impact my oyster grounds tremendously more.
I think that's not in the purview of our consideration today, but your point's well made. Any questions for Ms. Friedenstein? I have a couple. How long have you been engaged in oystering and leasing ground? And
since
1984.
When I obtained the lease.
So the pier down at the bottom was built long before you obtained.
No, not before 84, sir, but it was probably built around 1990, I would think.
Okay.
That's a rough guess.
Did you object at that point when it
no,
was built?
No, I did not object because there was nothing I was told I could do about it because there was no law. He was able to go out as far as he wanted to at that time. Is that true?
Okay.
1990? He's shaking his head.
Yes, ma'am. That'll work.
That's why I didn't complain about it.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Good having you here. Mr. Bug, you got a couple minutes to wrap up, if you would, please, sir. Sir.
My leg went to sleep. Some people attempt to characterize this as a development versus conservation issue, and Delegate Whitman's letter reads that way, but it's really not a a development versus conservation issue. It is a private versus commercial issue. Because actually, if you've got oysters growing and you leave them in the water, they're going to do more for your water quality than if you harvest them. So we're talking about private rights versus commercial rights. One of my favorite legal quotes, Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, very famous Supreme Court justice, rode down to the Supreme Court with one of the senators every morning. And he'd drop him off at the Supreme Court and go on over to the Senate or wherever he was going. And he got out one morning, the senator leaned over and said, do justice. He turned around and said, I don't do justice. I play by the rules. And that's the way the system works. We play by the rules. The rules are set down in the statutes. The statutes say that this commission may prescribe the design and location, not length, of the pier for the sole purpose of minimizing adverse impacts, not eliminating. I don't think this commission is empowered to reduce the length of the pier. Secondly, commercially productive oyster or clam grounds are defined as, and it's number two, evidence of commercial oyster or clam production within the past 3 years. Saying that putting down shell is production is like saying if the guys in the Ford plant pour a bunch of bolts into the hopper to make cars, that's commercial production of cars. Commercial production of cars, one is built, it's ready for somebody to sell. Commercial production is producing something that's commercially viable. Pulling them out of the water and selling them, I think that's clear. And so I think the Boswells are entitled to their permit. Actually, I think, as we established, they don't even need a permit. Thank you.
Just a couple of comments. When we talk about design, I think just in general, I think design is open for interpretation. Design can mean
size,
dimension, length, another. Not to debate the legal sense of it, but that's what I tend to believe.
Well, I would point out to the commissioner, if I may, that it's the commission's within the commission's ambit to interpret the statute, which it's charged with administering. And to the extent that the commission believes that design includes size and dimension, I'm perfectly free to do that.
Well, thank you. As for production, I don't want to get into a real debate on where's the chicken or the egg or whatever, but when you reproduce or you produce, it's not all of a sudden something that is there. A production sometimes does take time to get the nuts and the bolts and certain things together. So those are just a couple of thoughts I have as we ponder this case. I think you've done a great job in representing the client, but I think some of those words and arguments are certainly open to interpretation. I appreciate that. The matter's before the commission. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Just a follow-up comment on the issue of production. I'm not in the oyster business, but I have learned a few things about oysters since being here. And I think oyster production is more of a process than it is simply a production of finished goods. And you know, the traditional oyster business model in Virginia has been either shelling bottom for future spat sets, and that accomplishes ultimate production, or transplantation of seed oysters. And it sounds like both of those things have happened on this property, and specifically the property has been seeded as recently as 2005, we now know. But when the...
Shelled.
I'm sorry. Shelled. But when the code 28.2630 says it does set forward two requirements, and the first is suitable substrate for oyster or clam production. We've heard testimony today that requirement is probably satisfied, and the other one is that it must have evidence of commercial oyster or clam production within the last 3 years. And I'm inclined to look at that in a broader manner. And again, I think the traditional oyster production model in Virginia is a process, and like I said, it includes shelling and seeding and things like this that take time. You know, we've heard it takes up to 3 years. But certainly that activity has been ongoing in the past couple of years, and the fact that the grounds may be temporarily condemned doesn't mean that that's not a viable area for oyster production. And the way I would interpret that code is that it's a process, and I think I think in this case it is satisfied.
Mr. Chairman?
I have Mr. Bowden, then Mr. Hyland. Mr. Bowden?
I agree with Commissioner Bowman on length is part of design. You would never design a house by putting length in there. You would never get a permit to build it if you did. I'm probably in a unique position here because I have grown oysters a number of times. They grow much faster on seaside than they do on bayside, but if I plant seed, I can figure on 2 years before I can harvest. I would think on the bay, by planting shells, you're talking between 3 to 5 years. They are productive. They are producing. Just because you're not harvesting and selling them doesn't mean anything. There's a significant amount of grain on the seaside that were used for nothing but seed production. They were never harvested for sale. The seed producers was put on private grain to grow out. So you could make that argument they're not productive because nothing was sold off of that grain. It was moved for nothing. So I think the grain is productive. Like I say, I have grown oysters. I'm in the process of doing it again. The only way I know that you can get a 3 to 5 year old anything is wait 3 to 5 years. It's impossible to get a 3 to 5 year old without waiting 3 to 5 years. So they've made a significant investment in trying to grow oysters and knowing it was a 3 to 5 year payoff. It's not a payoff that you're going to get 2 weeks later. If it was, everybody would be in it. You wouldn't have an oyster problem. You'd have a seed problem, people being able to get them to raise them in 2 weeks. So I would certainly make the argument that it is productive oyster grain. Just because nothing has been sold in the last 3 years doesn't mean it's non-productive.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden. Mr. Holland?
I'm going to kind of refer back to our old Commissioner Bill Pruitt. I would like to see if, like we've got some gray areas here, if two sides and staff could meet and let us take a couple more issues up and see if they can't come up with a compromise. Somebody everybody can live with. If not, then we'll make a decision.
Amenable to the parties? I think through unanimous consent we can do that without a motion, if I'm not mistaken. Mr. Cale, could you facilitate the group and allow them to use the meeting room, if you would, please? Yes, sir, Mr. Cale. Okay, that's fine. That sure makes it easy. The matter's before the commission for action.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Bug, since I've opened up the door, go ahead. Come to the mic if you would. Jeff, have you seen it before, Jeff? I want you to look at it first.
The drawing I've just handed Mr. Madden is a proposed compromise that Mr. Boswell drew on the existing plan in red. The changes would be in red.
Hey, Andy, come on up here. I don't know.
Mr. Bug, while they're heating that up, can you tell me what the overall length will be as far as the compromise that you've proffered is concerned? 40 additional feet.
And 30 feet shorter than the proposal, and the L head has been turned parallel to the top. So those stick out as well.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean by the L head's been turned parallel to the top.
So it's on the opposite side?
So you might want to.
No, it's on the same side. It just doesn't stick out.
I can't hear him.
But it's bringing it. You're making it. It's not showing that way.
This portion is in red.
Mr. Buck, not to interrupt, your client wants to speak as well, and you're his lawyer, but if he wants to speak, I want you to know that he wants to speak.
You could probably explain this better than I do.
Be fine. Stand, raise your right hand, be sworn. Do you solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
State your name.
Bob Boswell.
Go ahead, Mr. Boswell.
Well, basically, I wanted to bring the
you're back 30 feet from the original proposal. The L head was 20 feet on the original, shortened that to 12 feet wide, and took the allotted square footage for the pier, for the platform, and ran it along the side of the pier, because I didn't think they'd be able to work their oyster boats so close to the pier. And the moorings on the right side there, I shortened that up to the 23 feet versus 30 feet. And what I'm trying to get is the boat that I have with the outboards up is 40 feet, needs a 40-foot slip to properly be properly moored, and that gives me 40 feet of water depth that I need for the boat that I have, not the boat that I would want in the future, but the boat that I have now. Right now...
40 inches? 40 inches of water depth?
Well, that's at the full length. So,
okay.
I'm coming back from 4 foot four, 4 foot two, I'm sorry, it's hard to see it on there, to 3 foot seven.
Okay.
So, and that will give me the 40 feet that I need to properly moor the boat.
I understand now, 40 feet lengthwise versus depth.
That's
been right. A long day.
Yeah, lengthwise. For the boat. Right now, where the boat sits now, it sits on the bottom a lot of times, and you know, it's just not a properly sized slip.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a follow-up question for the applicant while you're up there. Are you still requesting as part of your application a lift or not?
I've never requested a lift.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Just wanted to make sure.
Jeff? Jeff?
Yes,
sir. So to encapsulate or condensed where we are, what they're asking for is 10 more feet than what staff's recommendation, or what's the total? What's the total difference now? Let me have them sit here with a pencil and do the math of their proposal versus what staff's recommendation is.
Staff recommends a mean low water length of 101 feet.
Okay, and this brings it to?
We had recommended a 19-foot extension, right. That's a 30-foot pullback to 170.
120.
And that's a 40-foot extension, so the difference would be between 19 and 40. Yeah.
21.
21 feet.
21.
So it'd be 121 feet.
Yeah.
Okay.
We came out between somewhere right about here. Somewhere in this area right here. They want this extra piece here.
And the T would be on the...
Mr. Fox.
On the right, as we are looking at it on the drawing,
That's,
which is the opposite side of where the current T or L is now. And you would retain the one that you have on the...
That's correct. I need the 40 feet for the...
You'll need to be here, Mr. Boswell. So if you picked up by them.
Right, that's why I need the 40 feet for the properly mooring the boat. The boat with the outboards up is 35 feet, and they have your spring lines and everything. It's about 40. I've been in a couple of 40-foot slips, and it works very well for that boat. And if I have the T on the same side... The problem with that is then I don't have 40 feet on the side of that side of the boat.
Matters before the commission for action.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we accept the proposed change as presented by applicant.
Is there a second?
I second the motion.
Second by Mr. Schick. Further discussion to the motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Robbins.
Thank you. I appreciate the fact that the applicant has tried to put forward a compromise and pull the project back, but as I look back at the staff recommendation and the fact that this is that there's a very limited band of productive oyster bottom in this area. I mean, we're talking about an area that's fairly narrow and limited within this leaseholder's property. I think staff's recommendation is a good one, and I would offer a substitute compromising between staff's recommendation and what's been proffered by the applicant. That is to say, a length of 110 feet.
Is there a second to the substitute motion?
I'll second it.
Second by Mr. Bowden. Do we understand the substitute motion at the present time? Discussion to the substitute motion.
Yeah.
Mr. Schick, then Mr. Fox.
I see this as an issue of the right to wharf out to navigable water.
to the right to lease oyster grounds. Both of them have a long history in the Commonwealth of Virginia. But the right to wharf out has a longer history. And this is a huge problem. As the rural part of the Northern Neck and Middle Peninsula, you know, continues to grow, we're going to have more of this type of situation. But I think that the intention of the legislature is to allow people to wharf out. I see that the applicant is willing to compromise, and I think that we should allow that to come into play. Somebody should be rewarded for willing to compromise. Both sides have an important right, and I don't want to see the reduction of oyster production any more than anybody else. But, you know, this is a compromise situation, and that's what this board is here to do, and I think we should take the compromise that was offered by the applicant.
I agree.
Mr. Fox.
I just want to ask Mr. Robbins if he proposes to have the L on the left or the right in what you're talking about. My reason for asking this is at the present time, the right-hand side of the existing dock is clean and clear and can be oystered right up to the dock. If you move everything to one side, then it would seem to me would be more helpful to the oystering the oysterman without causing difficulty to the mooring of the boat. But
I don't think just in response. To that, but thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to that question, I don't think the and based on the testimony we heard, they're not oystering right up against the dock on the main stem. So I don't think the left or right location is of particular significance.
All right. Any further discussion on the substitute motion? Mr. Robbins, for the record, would you please repeat the substitute motions to be voted upon?
Yes, sir. It would be to allow for the extension to a total length of 110 feet and allow for the reoriented T-head as per the applicant's proffer.
Staff recommendation says it's a 101
foot. Just like right. And who had seconded the substitute? Mr. Bowden, will you second the substitute? Yes, is that how you understand it?
Yes, sir.
All in favor of the substitute motion, signifying by saying aye.
Aye.
Raise your right hands. All opposed? Motion fails. The floor is open, I presume. First motion, right? All in favor of the first motion, which will be restated. Who made the motion?
I did.
Mr. Holland?
I think I did. No, you made it.
I made it.
Who's on first?
That we would allow permit to for the applicant as he has come back on his compromise, which was 121 feet at the 40-foot extension. 122 feet, which is a 40-foot extension, and the L to be placed on the as proffered by the applicant.
Second,
Mr. Holland. Okay.
So it's 122 feet.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right, so it's an additional 40.
From mean low water.
The additional 40 from where it is, right. Okay, yes. We don't want to have a conflict there.
All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Next item. No problem. Absolutely. Next item on the agenda is Jerry Ferguson.
JT, back to 2 seconds.